So, thank you very much for participating in the Bhakti Shastri course, which was actually inspired by His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu. He is the main source of inspiration for this course at ISV. And we offer our humble obeisances and gratitude to Him for making us an instrument in His service. So we are in the third semester of the Bhakti Shastri, and today we will be discussing chapter 14. Because of one class missing, we are reading the chapter and then we are discussing the chapter towards the end. The homework is due tomorrow for those who haven't submitted it yet, so there is still some time. This chapter's homework was more of an open-ended question. So without much further ado, let's go into the 14th chapter and see what Krishna has to say to us. And before that, we just offer our Mangalacharan prayers to all the previous acharyas to give us strength to understand, assimilate and realize Bhagavad Gita. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpataru Bhayascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Okay, yeah, that's a good thing. Hare Krishna, there are some devotees who are attending online, and now that we have the facility because of Ramananda Sakha Prabhu and Nilesh Prabhu's efforts, we can we can, whoever is there online, can they just say Hari Bol and identify themselves? And please enter star and then 6 to unmute.
Radha Venkat Prabhu from Folsom.
Hare Krishna, Radha Venkat Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam, this is Damodar Vamsidhari Das.
Hare Krishna, Damodar Vamsidhari Prabhu. It's two callers, that's it. It's nice. Because the reason I ask is that few devotees said they will attend online. So I didn't hear the name of those devotees who said they will attend online. So, exactly. I don't mean to catch them, but at least, right? Yeah. So from next time on, we can make this thing that attendance to the class is compulsory. Otherwise, you'll be deducted some points. Or if you don't attend the class, then you have to distribute one set of Bhagavatam. And one Krishna book. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and if they have technical difficulties, then -5 for you.
Anyways. The reason we have the class is because we can have discussions. That's the whole idea. Otherwise, there is no need for a class. Anyways, let's go into the 14th chapter. The 14th chapter is called The Three Modes of Material Nature. In the last class, yes, you had a problem? Okay. Okay. In the last class, we discussed the 13th chapter, and one of the questions was like, what was the modes of material nature? The 14th chapter is a continuation of a verse from the 13th chapter. 13th chapter and 22nd verse. Let's quickly go to page... It's a famous verse, page 589 of Gita. Purushaha prakriti stohi bhungte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. This is 13th chapter and 22nd verse. The living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. So Krishna says that because of association of the modes of material nature, the living entity again takes birth in different kinds of wombs in the material world. Continuation or an expansion to that verse is Krishna more vividly describes what those modes are and how one is entrapped in those modes. And in the later stages of the chapter, he says, how can one get out of those modes? So that is the sum and substance of the entire 14th chapter. So let's turn to the 14th chapter. It's on page 603. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Param Bhuya Pravakshami Jnananam Jnanamuttamam Yajnatva Munayas Sarve Param Siddhim Ito Gataha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, again I shall declare to you the supreme wisdom, the best of knowledge, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained supreme perfection. Now the question one might ask is, the best of all knowledge, because Krishna already described in the 9th chapter the most confidential, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Ida Uttamam. So what is this best of the knowledge? And Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan says, the best of the knowledge refers to Nilesh Prabhu. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Because you read Surrender Unto Me, I just was trying to. So the best of all knowledge is the relationship between Jiva and Prakriti. So that is a kind of knowledge. Till now, Krishna described more in a theoretical fashion, that my modes are strong, and unless one surrenders out to me, they cannot overcome. Then the living entity has nothing to do with this body, and the modes are only acting. So in this case, Krishna directly gives what is the relationship between Jiva and Prakriti. And so that is, that knowledge is, he says, the best of the knowledge concerning Jiva and Prakriti. So that is a specific qualification when Krishna says that, I'm giving you the knowledge, the best of all knowledge. Because this is a direct way. For example, if you are trapped in a well, if someone comes and says that, you know, and you have forgotten who you are, and you are trapped in a well, and then somebody comes and says, oh, you are so and so person, and you know, this is a big, huge well. The next step you'll ask is, great, but how do I get out of this well? So this kind of knowledge, that angle that Krishna gives in the 14th chapter is, how do you actually get out of the modes of material nature? So that constitutes the best of the knowledge for the soul. Just like a man who is trapped in a well needs to know the method out to get out of the well. All the other details are important. And later we learn in the end of the chapter that knowing who you are or getting out of the modes of material nature, one can render devotional service onto Krishna. There is a little bit of subtle points there we'll discuss one after another. Another important point in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, not here, sorry, it's there is a place where Srila Prabhupada says philosophical speculation. So it's not in this particular verse. Okay. We'll keep going ahead. Sorry. Text 2. Itam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agataha sarge pi nopajayante pralayena vyathantiche na vyathantiche. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. So the nature of this knowledge, or one who is fixed in this knowledge, Krishna says, is that one attains the nature like one's own. Which means to say, Hare Krishna, which means to say that one doesn't become Krishna. One becomes like Krishna. Because that is the central point of the Achintya Bheda Veda Tattva. Which is that one is, the Jiva is simultaneously one and different from Krishna. So the Jiva can get, Hare Krishna, the Jiva can get the same nature as Krishna, same nature of Sat, Chit, Ananda. And Krishna says that one attains. Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes the same thing in the purport, that the Jiva can never be equal to God in that sense. Yeah. Text 3, 4 and 5. Krishna says that how one comes into contact with the modes of material nature. Mama Yonir, this is on, we are on page 605 and 14th chapter, text 3rd, for those who just came now. Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma Tasmin Garbham Dadamyaham Sambhava Sarva Bhutanam Tato Bhavati Bharata. The total material substance called Brahman is the source of the birth. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings, O son of Bharata. Text 4. Sarva yoni shukanteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahat yonir aham bija prajapitah. Text 5. Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhava nibadnanti mahavaho dehe dehinam avyayam. Material nature consists of three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with the nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. So Krishna says that I gave birth to all the living beings into the material nature. So Krishna creates the material substance called Mahatattva, and then he impregnates that Mahatattva with Jivas. And from there, the Jivas are born. It seems like when you look around, it seems as if material nature is creating beings. I mean, you don't see the hand of God directly behind the creation, right? I mean, people are coming into being. Even in the forest, in the places, animals are coming into being, and it is said that Mother Nature is actually producing this particular different species of life and maintaining them. But Krishna says that I am the one who impregnates. Excuse me. Yes. Okay. Is this better?
The question I have is, why it is said the source? It is not the source, right? Source is Krishna, right? Because he impregnates.
The direct source or the perceivable source is the material nature. For example, Srila Prabhupada gives in the purport that the scorpion, it lays its eggs amongst the rice. And when the small scorpions or baby scorpions come out, it seems as if rice has given birth to the scorpions. You can't see the mother scorpion which actually laid the eggs in the rice. And when you see, oh, rice is producing scorpions. But actually it is the mother scorpion who put in the eggs. Similarly, Krishna makes this material nature the apparent source of the living entities. But he says, unless I impregnate the material nature, nothing comes out of it. So, if you are saying the source is, the verse, the source of the birth, right? Yeah. And then, so the apparent source is Brahman, but the indirect source is Krishna. Ultimate source is Krishna. And this Brahman, there is a little bit of confusion because Brahman means spiritual. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that sometimes Mahatattva or the total sum or substance of material nature is also called Brahman based on how you look at which angle. So Brahman. And then we'll read that Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. In the last verse we'll read again. We reach to the stage of Brahman. So, any questions? Any comments so far? And in the text 5, Krishna says that the modes of material nature, or the material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And later we'll read on how those modes are actually acting upon the living entity. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, on the text 1 about your, when you're asking philosophical speculation, I think in text 1, purport line 4, if one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to the understanding of devotional service.
Wonderful.
First point.
Yes. Thank you so much, Damodar Vamsidhari Prabhu. This was the point I was looking at. If we go back to text 1, this is one point I wanted to clarify, because one of the things we avoid, and Prabhupada says over and over again, that one cannot speculate, because through mental speculation one cannot understand Krishna. But here when Prabhupada says, if he understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to the understanding of devotional service. This doesn't mean that you mentally speculate and you understand Krishna. It is that whatever you learn from the source or from authority of Krishna, then deliberate over that subject matter in accordance with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then we can actually understand devotional service. That is the difference, because in many places Srila Prabhupada said mental speculation cannot lead to Krishna. Even Krishna in Brahma, he says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavatam that, what's that verse? No, not Jnana Prayasa is one verse, then also Athapi Te Deva Padambuja. Yeah. So it is said, Athapi Te Deva Padambuja Dvaya Prasada Lesha Nugrahita Evahi Janati Tatvam Bhagavan Mahino Nachanya Ekopi Chiram Vichinvan. That Brahma says that unless one gets a trace, or a particle of your mercy, then only can one understand the greatness about you. But even if he speculates for a very, very long time, he still cannot understand you. So if speculation cannot lead one to Krishna, Srila Prabhupada saying that philosophical speculation is equal to mental speculation is incorrect. So how can we understand this philosophical speculation is to deliberate over and to understand and realize this subject matter. That's the understanding of philosophical speculation here. And also, the 14th chapter, there is a certain leeway for understanding the modes of material nature. There is a little bit of speculation in the sense like we take this knowledge and we apply it to ourselves. So what mode of material nature am I in at this particular point of time? So that is some sort of, you know, philosophical debate or a deliberation over or applying the knowledge we got. That is the philosophical speculation part, Krishna says. Yeah. This is an important point. Thank you, Damodar Vamshidhari Prabhu, for bringing up that point. Any questions on that philosophical speech? We can go over the whole purport if you want to, again, just to get an idea. Should we? Yeah, we have the time. Let's do it. Text 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again I shall declare to you the supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection, purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada." From the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the Lord Himself is further enlightening Arjuna. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may be possibly freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to the association with modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in the material world. Now in this chapter, the Supreme Personality explains what those modes of nature are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attained perfection and transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this, many attained perfection. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. That gives us some strong impetus to actually read the 14th chapter. We'll attain perfection if we can understand it. Yes, Kishore Prabhu, welcome back.
Now that I'm not sure if that is discussed already, but forgive me if that is. Here it is said this knowledge is far, far superior than other processes of knowledge thus far explained. But we also see that 7 to 12 chapters are the you know crux of Bhagavad Gita, and first 6 and last 6 are the, you know, the coverings of the or the protection of those best chapters. So how do we understand this knowledge is far, far superior to whatever has been that explained?
Yeah, we did discuss that before you came, but I think few of other devotees missed, so we'll repeat that particular aspect. Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan says that this particular knowledge is far superior because the direct relationship between Jiva and Prakriti is given by Krishna. We were discussing the example of an analogy of a man who's forgotten himself and who's trapped in a deep well. In the first few chapters, Krishna said that the body is a soul and then the modes are at play and I am the Supreme Lord who is controller of the modes. There are so many things Krishna said. It's like saying to the man in the well, like, your name is this, this well is this much, this levels of darkness, this height, this width. And so your first question is of the man who is trapped in the well is, how do I get out of it? That's the first question. So Krishna says that this is far superior because I'm giving you a direct link on how to get out. That doesn't in any form or shape reduce the significance of the previous chapters, because when you apply this 14th chapter, then you can really understand and directly delve into devotional service to Krishna. So in that, progressively, it is superior. Srila Baladeva Devotion says, this knowledge is far superior because the direct relationship between Jiva and Prakriti is mentioned by Krishna, which was not mentioned before. And later in the chapter, we'll learn how Arjuna says, you know, how do I get out of, or who is beyond the modes of material nature? And Krishna gives, how can you come out of this particular thing? So that's why it is like far superior. But not... In terms of this is better than Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajivam Namaskuru. 9th chapter, 34th verse. That is like the most confidential instruction. And then Sarvadharman Parityaja. These are like the most confidential instructions of Gita. There is confidential, more confidential, and most confidential instructions in the Gita. So these three verses constitute the most confidential instructions. The two Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto verses, one is in 9th chapter, 34th verse, and 18th chapter, and then 1866 Sarvadharman Parityagya. Because there, in those verses, Krishna gives the seeds or the basis of prema. That is, he doesn't directly mention that, but if you do that, then it's on the platform of prema. Actually, can you do whatever he says? So... So the next, can we go ahead? Any questions? Any comments? Thank you, Kishore Prabhu, for bringing up the questions. Text 6 on page 607. So till now, Krishna says that material nature consists of three modes. He kind of further elaborates on those modes. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakasham anamayam sukha-sangena badnanti jnana-sangena chanaga. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than others, is illuminating and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So, Krishna says that the mode of goodness is better, and Prabhupada says in the second chapter of the purport, the difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and is better than others. So, because Krishna, all the modes, one should understand, are binding the living entity to the material world. Even in the mode of goodness, the defect or the problem with the mode of goodness is, Prabhupada writes, that one feels I am superior, and that the happiness and knowledge from the mode of goodness is not the problem. The problem is when the living entity is attached to the mode of goodness, thinking that I am happy, and then in that happiness he thinks that I am superior to others, I am better than others. And for those who come from India, this, even those in the... not directly Brahmana families, even from the Dvija Bandhus, they have this feeling because they have a little bit of, you know, piety in the background. They think they are superior to others, and thus that somehow or other they think they can dominate the other classes, or they think they are better than others. So maybe they do some sort of activities which are in the mode of goodness, but the problem is that the false ego comes with that. So one has to be careful even in the mode of goodness that one cannot. Therefore, in the Krishna consciousness, we say everybody, we have the living entity is the servant of Krishna and also the servant of all the other living beings. With that instruction, Mahaprabhu kind of curbed the sort of mode of goodness attractions which come about, saying that I am superior, or because I have more knowledge, I am more refined, I have more intelligence, I have more smarts, I am better than others. This is the problem with mode of goodness. But having said that, one should always strive for mode of goodness because that's the only way. Just like if you are falling in the well and if you make the left, then you will go even into more deeper well. If you go to right, then you will kind of stay there. If you go to the left, then you have a chance of going up. Which one would you take to go up? Wherever there is a chance of coming out of that well. So Krishna says mode of goodness is something which will help you come out of this dark material existence. But one cannot simply be satisfied with that mode. that, okay, man, I am in the mode of goodness. I mean, I have struggled hard and mode of passion and ignorance are subjugated. I'm happy. No, still you are in the material world. So that is a word of caution. And it will come in the next verses when Krishna says how modes are not like going to let you go. There is a competition. Modes are fiercely competing for you. Just like, you know, the manufacturers are competing. Manufacturers of high definition TV are trying to compete for you. Sometimes you feel this is good. Sometimes you feel that is good. Sometimes that is feel good. So, go ahead. Questions? Comments? Yes.
What are the sources of modes of nature?
Krishna.
Only Krishna or our karma and everything? There are a lot of factors.
Modes of material nature is, the source is Krishna. That's what is where you, was your question. I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
I mean, modes of nature affects us, right?
Correct.
So, ultimately Krishna is controlling, but... it is not that he wants to, in a sense, there must be something which we also deserve to be affected by. We have taken some action.
Right.
That is why.
So we'll go to
it's the system, right?
Yes. We'll go. Chapter 9, yes. Shraddha Mataji says chapter 9. And then I have some other also. So your question is like how the modes are affecting us or how the modes control us. I still am sorry, 100% not sure about your question.
In the sense that is this mode of nature just one entity or like in a sense it is right now I'm surrounded by devotees, so I'm in the mode of goodness. It means I'm affected by the mode of goodness. Suppose I go to, let's say, driving a car, then I'm in the mode of passion.
Yes.
So it's like not this, it's surrounding also and it's a combination of a lot of factors.
Yes.
It's not just...
Yes, in Bhagavatam, Krishna says there are a lot of factors. It depends on what sort of scriptures you study, what sort of Vedas do you hear, what sort of time are you in. Even during the course of the day, there are some days, some hours which are in the mode of passion, mode of goodness, and mode of ignorance. Then whom do you associate with? And what sort of work do you do? So there are so many factors which constitute our modes. And oppositely, a person who is in the mode also gets attracted to certain things. So if one is mainly dominated by mode of passion, he's hardworking. I need to get stuff. I'll work very 18 hours a day. I need to build this company. I need to become a multi-billionaire. And this is the way the mode of passion is predominant. But one cannot be always under the particular mode. Sometimes that person thinks after he builds something, he gets a success, then, you know, I need to give charity. You know, there is a Bill Gates Foundation giving like hundreds of billions of dollars into that foundation. So they do some sort of... So it's a modes which are competing. You can't simply say, I'm in this mode, I'm stuck in this mode. There is a predominance of where the modes come in. So, does that answer your question? Or
yeah.
Kind of. But, Mataji, you had something?
No, I was talking about chapter 15, verse
15. 15, which one, Mataji?
9 and 10.
Please, use the phone. Use the mic. I apologize.
Yeah, so I was talking about chapter 15, verse 9, where it says the living entity thus taking another gross body. And prior to that, he was talking about the mind and the sixth sense. And so here it says that living entity thus taking another gross body obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose and sense of touch which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. And then in 10 it says the foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So I was kind of thinking that Krishna has created those material modes of nature,
right.
But then depending on the samskaras that we carry in a subtle body,
right.
We'll get a suitable body to suffer or enjoy.
Correct. That's one excellent example. And also in the 13th chapter, you had a... Okay, in the 13th chapter, 21st verse. That's okay, it was switched on. 13th chapter, 21st verse. It is said that Karya karana kartritve hetu prakritir uchyati purusha sukha dukkhanam boktritve hetur uchyate. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyments of this world. So, does this answer your question a little bit? Okay. Okay.
Actually, what you are saying, Bhagavatam.
One more, okay.
In Bhagavatam it is mentioned, where is it mentioned?
In the 11th chapter. I don't remember, I can look it up and I can tell you.
Because I also read something like that in Purijan Das Prabhu.
Yeah, it's there.
It says 10 factors, but I could not find it. So
in Bhagavatam you couldn't find it? He didn't give any reference?
No.
Okay.
Not direct reference, maybe indirect.
Okay. We can look it up.
Factors affecting.
Prabhu, I have one more question.
Yes. Damodar, one
second. Prabhuji, like, you know, in few verses, it says, you know, like in text 6, it says, the mode of goodness, purer than the others, is illuminating. That illumination comes, like later also say, one who neither hates illumination nor, you know, so what is actually meant when someone is in mode of goodness is illuminating?
When we say it's illuminating, it means, say, one is going towards the real knowledge, or one is trying to understand what is real knowledge. And we read in the next coming verses that mode of goodness gives rise to the real knowledge, which is the knowledge of soul and the material nature, and how one can know what exactly is my position in this world and how should I get out of it. That's mode of goodness, or what? That's illumination in the mode of goodness. Is that answering your question, Damodar Vamshidhari Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu. I'll ask follow-up question if I have more.
Okay.
Later.
I'm sorry. Prasad had a... He is waiting from that time. Sorry.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prasad Prabhu.
So when Ilesh Prabhu asked the question, like, what is the origin of all the three modes? So I was thinking, so you said that Lord Krishna is the origin. So Lord Krishna has, like, created a framework of, you know, three material modes of nature. But they are not, like, you know, rigid modes. You know, it's like red, blue and green. You can have many different combinations, you know. In fact, unlimited number of combinations. So, you know, so that is the framework which he has given. So before the jiva falls down, I mean, depending on his taste, he can associate with any one of the mode or a mix of mode. So as per the verse 21 on page 588, so just because we are surrounded by a specific mode or a combination of modes, the choice of suffering or enjoying is within us.
Yes.
So it's not that, you know, if you are in a temple amongst devotees, it's not the rule that you are in the mode of goodness.
Mute doesn't work. Actually, well, Krishna says that wherever in his temple is, if one lives by the principles of devotional service, then that temple is beyond the mode of nature at all. Of course, if it depends on the devotees in the temple. If they are sincerely following the order of their spiritual master and trying to please Krishna, then Krishna is present amongst them. And wherever there is Krishna, there is no modes. But
yeah,
if a temple has other ulterior motives and other agendas amongst the devotees, and then it is just a product of Kali Yuga.
Yeah, true. So, I mean, devotees, they are always, you know, transcendental to these modes. It's like, you know, a devotee, wherever he goes, it is a Vaikuntha. But when it comes to an ordinary jiva, it doesn't mean that even if he is amongst devotees, unless he is really advanced, his sufferings and enjoyments are directly linked to the situation. But it doesn't apply to devotee, because in case of devotee, this verse applies. He can create his own Vaikuntha even amidst a you know, miserable condition?
He can create his own Vaikuntha or feel the Vaikuntha rather. Because Vaikuntha is created by Krishna. I understand the point. You're saying is that you can experience the Lord even amidst the greatest of all the troubles, which is what you are trying to see. Yes, thank you. Yes, you're right. But having said that, the modes of nature subdue when there is devotional activity going on. Even though the devotee may be a neophyte, or even though the devotee is a beginner, but still one can feel the effect of the material miseries little bit slackening on that devotee during the time of devotional service. Krishna gives that special mercy at the beginning stages so that the devotee can understand there is actually something here. Ramananda Sakapravu had a question. Kishore had a follow-up.
Why do you say in the beginning stages, Prabhuji? Because it's all the time, isn't it?
All the time, but one of the senior leaders of ISKCON, he said that when one is there in 20 years, when one is chanting, initially when in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, when you come, you give any service, you feel that Krishna is the center and I have to please Krishna and do the service joyfully. And when one is in the movement for 20 years, then let's get over my round. Let's have to somehow or other complete this round. The reason being that if one is not aware that one is serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna by doing devotional service, it happens because that's the nature of mind. Mind is like, I'm used to listening to this sound every day. I have to do these regulations. You have to struggle. Early on, there is some special mercy. That's just the way it is here. At least that's what I have seen in ISKCON. That initially there is a lot of enthusiasm. Later, you know, it kind of, you have to struggle. So Krishna gives special mercy in the beginning. He gives protection always. There have been cases where devotees left ISKCON. And they said, there is something outside devotional service that is great. And my spiritual master said, they were the most miserable people on this planet. Because, A, they couldn't give up devotional service. Because once you have the taste of devotional service, Krishna gives you that taste, you are hooked forever, basically. And even if you leave that service, you'll remember that taste and you always want to come back. And once you get that taste, unfortunately, your taste for enjoying and lording over the material world decreases to that extent. So you're neither there trying to enjoy material world, you can't properly enjoy, neither are you like experiencing the spiritual bliss. So you are like in the middle of nowhere. So at that time, if you still push, keep on pushing and having the association of devotees, then we know that, you know, this is the path. Even though it's a little difficult for me now, it's like, I'll pray to Krishna and sincerely. Few years, I hope and pray that it's only me and everybody else will really keep on going on devotional service. And that's just me. Yes, Sadhana Mataji.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I was thinking from, you know, the modes of material modes of nature to me are a very dynamic thing that are part of oneself and are constantly at play. And I think sitting here, one can be in any mode because it's partly to do with what's going on inside your internal being, how well you're centered, right? So clearly, if you're sitting here and you're here for the goodness, then you receive it because you're open to receiving it. But I think one can sit here and be here for a different purpose. So I think one has to be very clear about their goal. And if one is clear about their goal, they then get to the next level, which is to see more of the goodness versus maybe the, I call them the gunas, right? The rahas, so much passion versus too much just dullness as well. So I think it's in the clarity. And I think at any moment in time, like I think your example where you start being very, at first, we are always eager, and I think everything in life is like that, right? And,
yeah.
And these are the gunas. They always do that to a human being. When you have your first baby, to when you have your first car, it's the same. The pattern is always there. And I think the idea is to break out of that through discernment, right? And maybe that's the dialogue in here, is that right? In chapter 14 is to understand the prakriti, which is material mode, and the jiva, and to know how we can break out of that material mode, right? So it's some level of discernment and the right knowledge.
Yeah. And that's what Krishna says in the early on, that those who are fixed in this knowledge, they understand, they come to my nature. And Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. So one can come out of the modes of material nature.
But so in understanding that, then I sort of, because I live as a family holder, you know, with children, and you have to find the right balance. I think to come into devotional service, but then to go out and have all the things, you know, I already have children, I already have, and I still owe my duty to that. So did you say that if one lives without clarity, one can't live in both places, they have to decide on one or the other? Okay, if you could just clarify that.
Sure. In the eighth chapter, Krishna says, he gives the secret of success. What's that verse? Always think of me and fight. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Thank you. Eighth chapter, seventh verse. It's on page 372, if you can look at it. Let's say, actually, that's a pretty relevant verse for all of us here, because none of us are living beyond the jurisdiction of family responsibilities. Text 8, text 7 on page 372. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudyacha mayarpita mano vidir mam evaishyasi asamshayaha. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without a doubt. Now, this instruction to Arjuna is far more challenging, because imagine you are in the battle and you really have to be very, very alert. Otherwise, any moment, any arrow will come and just kill you. We are not even in that battlefield where there is a mortal danger to our life every waking hour of our day. So, but this instruction, if it is applicable to Arjuna, then it's very much more easily applicable to us, even though we are doing our daily household activities or at our job, business, whatever it may be. So it is possible that we can do it. Because Krishna says in the fifth chapter, Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra, that whoever sees me everywhere and who sees everything in me, I am not lost to him, he is not lost to me. So that transcendental nature is very much possible. It's just a matter of advancing in devotional service. We come to that stage for sure. In the initial stages, when we are too absorbed in family life, probably for last 4 hours I haven't thought of Krishna. But gradually that will come about. And even if you are dealing with your kids, anything, you are still aware of Krishna. It's possible. Does that answer your question?
Okay, so then let's say that one does that and one tries to do that. But then we talk about Ishkan and coming together and chanting and having sort of, you know, it's a better energy because it actually is a better place to then be more spiritually aware, if you like. So then what I think I'm hearing is you can go in and out and you know, be here sometimes but not be here all the time. Or, you know, how much time do you make, and when does one know when one balance is not enough? And
well, in devotional service, the preliminary stage is sadhana, means, which is your name, of course, but her name is sadhana, by the way. The preliminary stage is called sadhana stage, which means that one does it by practice. One has no spontaneous attachment to serve Krishna. It's just, for example, you are a mother, and it's a mother, you spontaneously are attracted to your child. Nobody tells you that, you know, oh, you have to feed your child. No, it spontaneously comes about, and you realize that you are aware that your needs of the child and how, you know, you are just spontaneously attracted to the child and you serve the child, take care of the child. It's not. It's a very natural thing for a mother. So in the initial sadhana stage, it's more of a regulative stage. You are like, you know, you have to do certain things. But when you advance that, there is a spontaneous attraction for Krishna. There is no need for anybody to tell you. Right? All right. Thank you. So, yes, we'll take the last question and then we'll go ahead because it's 3 o'clock.
I have the follow-up question to Damodar Vamsidhari Prabhu's question.
Yes.
He asked about illumination in this verse. So you said when we are increasing in knowledge, that's called illumination. But there is, in the 11th verse, there is something more on that illumination. Where it is said the gates of the body are illuminated by the knowledge.
We'll come to that.
All right.
We'll come to that. Okay, let's go more into the modes and how they affect us. Shraddha Mataji, you had a question, no? Okay. Okay, fine, let's... actually, under illusion, I think that I'm driving this. You guys are driving me. I'm your servants. No. I'm truly the servant here. Yes, Prabhuji, tell me.
Prabhuji, this is for the callers on the phone. Because I'm also, you know, just monitoring and seeing the quality level of the, you know, the whole thing. And I'm hearing some background noise, and that is coming from the phone lines. And so I want to see, you know, if anyone has got his phone not muted. For the callers on the phone, if you have not muted your line, please mute it. And please, you know, don't just use your mute button on the phone. Because that only mutes the phone, but again, there is going to be some noise the system will pick up. So you should mute by pressing *6. Unfortunately, when you press *6, it doesn't tell you whether you have muted or unmuted. But you don't know unless you listen. When you press *6, you should also listen. It says whether you are muted or unmuted. So if it says muted, then that's the correct way to mute it. In that way, the system will completely avoid picking up any noise from the phone lines. Thank you.
By completing that announcement, Ramananda Sakaprabhu has unmuted me.
You are now unmuted.
Thank you. I can proceed. So text 7, we go into the mode of passion. It's on page 609. Rajo ragatmikam viddi trishna sanga samudbhavam tan nibadnanti kaunteya karma sangena dehinam. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive activities. Text 8. Tamastu ajnana jam vidhi mohanam sarvadehinam pramadalasya nidrabhis tan nibadnati bharata. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence and sleep which bind the conditioned soul. Srila Prabhupada nicely explains the mode of ignorance. He says the madness is that the living entity, he knows that I'm not going to live forever. And especially in India, there is like this feverish desire to collect wealth. Why? Why do you need so much wealth? Because I can give it to my son. I can give it to my grandson. And my grandson's grandson. I can establish a big lineage. Oh, where are you going to be? What is your position after death? That is madness. Srila Akhandi Srila Prabhupada. And then indolence is that, you know, when the people under the modes are asked, come, we have like a you know, satsang going on, there is Bhagavad Katha going on. No, very lazy. You know, it's okay. So that's Akhandi Srila Prabhupada is the laziness or indolence. And sleep is they tend to sleep more than what is needed. the other practical thing is that Srila Prabhupada says one should sleep for 6 hours a day. But it is between 6 to 7 hours based on how much can your body handle. For some people, based on the age and the work they do or the other activities, between 6 to 7 hours of sleep is needed. Children, they sleep a lot more, but for us, it's six. If the problem is that you sleep for 6 hours because Prabhupada says in this, and in the next day morning and you are half asleep during your chanting, then, you know, probably ensure better rest and chant attentive rounds. That's the idea. Rather than, again, it's the application of the principle is that the goal is one should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. All the other rules are servant of that two rules. So that's where the intelligence or the philosophical speculation or understanding comes about. Prabhupada says 6 hours. I should sleep only for 6 hours. It doesn't matter if I sleep halfway through the work. It doesn't matter if I sleep all the way through my chanting. I don't care. Meetings also I sleep. And then more dangerously, I sleep at the wheel of my car. It is okay. I'll go bang into it. This is not a practical application. So we should say that, okay, my body can not work at 6 hours. I need 7 hours. So sleep for 7 hours. Adjust the time and then get up in the morning, get your rounds done properly with attentive frame of mind. That's important rather than... So that is the application of the principles. Because Prabhupada himself said at some other places that, you know, it's 6 to 7 hours based on how much your body is. If you have to... Text 9. O son of Bharata, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruitive activities, and ignorance covering one's knowledge binds one to madness. So in this four verses, Krishna gives the nutshell of the verses. In the tenth, he says the dynamics of the modes. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance, O son of Bharata. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. Wow. It's just like, you know, modes are itself really strong. As if that's not enough, then there is like this competition going on between the modes. Go ahead.
This always confuses me, Prabhuji, because modes are not like living things. How can they compete among themselves? When we say modes are competing, it's like, you know, it's some conscious aspect, you know, we are relating it to some conscious aspect. So is it like, you know, an alcoholist, you know, blaming that, you know, this bottle is the one that is that is a problem to me. I am not the problem, but the bottle is the problem. So is it that way? You know, when we say modes are competing.
The first question is that Krishna says, "Daivi hesha gunamai mamamaya duratya." That this is my energy. Material nature is my energy, and that comprises of the three modes of material nature. So material nature is a living dynamic force because it is coming from Krishna. And the goal of the material nature is to exactly do what it is, the thankless job of keeping the living entity in the spell of ignorance, thinking that I am the controller and the enjoyer. That is done only through the modes. So yes, the modes are dynamic. They are like real, they are life, and they are inexhaustible and very powerful because they are energy of Krishna. Otherwise, the living entity is equal to Krishna in quality with Krishna. So can't we cross over the nature? No, because Krishna's energy is so superior and the material nature is able to subjugate. And we are thinking just this lifetime or this hour. The material nature or the modes of nature have been subjugating us since time immemorial. Every birth after birth after birth is the same modes. Karanam guna sangosya. The same modes of material nature that have been keeping us in captive, in spell. It's like, I am the body, I am the enjoyer, I got to go ahead, I got to be something in this world, I'll be happy. But then, you know, this is happening because of modes of material nature. So they are very dynamic. And I'm sorry, with my answer to your first part, I forgot the second part of your question.
Are there like a living modes of nature are like conscious entities?
They are. Because they are energy of Krishna. See, the goal of modes of material nature is to somehow or other keep the living entity under this illusion. And therefore, they have this dynamics. Because if the mode of material, assume that a man is purely under the mode of passion and nothing else, probably he'll die in 2 months. Seriously, because of the simple fact that he's working day and hard night. That's okay, I don't have to sleep. I can sleep only for 2 hours this night, and next day I'll do it. And the mode is constantly acting on him. He'll die without lack of sleep and eating for in 2 months. Or imagine a person is always completely in the deep mode of ignorance. He'll die in 2 days because of taking intoxication and drugs and alcohol. 3 days, he's gone. So the modes is like, then, you know, a man is like, intoxicating, taking the intoxicating beverages, and sometimes mode of goodness a little bit comes about. What the hell am I doing? What is this existence? Let me join Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me kind of come out, see what's happening to my life. You know, you feel repentance. Let me become a nice person. Mode of goodness comes about a little bit. Or I'm just wasting my life drinking like this. You know, see that man, he has made already multi-million dollars and he's become such a nice thing. Maybe I should go and do something. So mode of passion is acting. See this? But evening comes, he go and hits the bar. That is the predominating mode of ignorance acting on that person. But there is some of passion, some of goodness coming in here. There is a church, you know, people are so good there, you know, I should go something. Goodness. A little bit of goodness comes in. So that's how the modes are still acting on that man. So there's the competition here. So this is the competition. He has a question, and you were quick on that. Yes.
Yeah, so I'll comment in the form of a question.
Okay.
So there are two conflicts I see. One conflict in the mind, and one conflict between demigods. Because
when, demigods?
Yeah. So when Krishna, you know, creates these modes, for each mode, there's a demigod who's responsible for that, right?
Right. I mean,
based on one painting. So it's like those demigods are fighting among themselves to get more brownie points from Lord Krishna. Like, who is able to influence their mode on the living entities? So that is one conflict. The other conflict is within our mind. Like, you know, we are given a lot of choices. You know, like, you know, you go to a shopping mall, you get overwhelmed. And then there's a conflict whether to buy this or that. So, I mean, is it true that, you know...
Well... with the demigods, there is no conflict. It's like they don't win a gold medal based on how many number of people they have subjugated. They are harmoniously acting under the will of Krishna. In fact, who is the god for mode of goodness? Vishnu. He is Krishna himself. So he is one of the guna avatars. So there is no conflict. It's just everybody is subservient to Vishnu. Lord Shiva is subservient to Lord Vishnu, and Brahma is subservient to Lord Vishnu. So that is Lord Vishnu's desire that this be created this way, and they are just working in conjunction. There is no question of, you know, conflict among them. There is no brownie points, nothing like that. That's material thinking. That is thinking under the modes of material nature. And they are not. They are a little beyond that. In fact, Shiva is beyond the modes. He's pretty, very, very, like, you know, powerfully situated in his transcendental position. So that is there is no conflict there. And the second point is, yes, there is
so
a conflict.
So the conflict here applies to the conflict within one's mind.
Correct. One's mind. See, the thing is, mind is not alone driving your activities. There is a false ego that's connected to intelligence and mind. So, you know, false ego thinks I am, and then I have this mind to help me manipulate and attain my desires. So there is a whole subtle package, or whole subtle body package of the living entity that's interacting with the modes and driving the modes.
So we should include the samskaras and the subconscious mind, our karmas, all this coming together to influence the decision.
To an extent, yeah. Yeah. Because our past karmas will have definitely an impression on our mind, and they drive you to go certain ways. Yes. it's a combination. It's like to analyze this, it's not that easy, at least for a conditioned soul. You know, where is the mode acting? Where is the previous karma coming about? Where is the fruits of the reaction? There are so many things which are like binding a living entity. There is a past karma. There are so many things that are at play. So honestly, it's impossible to discern. It's just we accept Krishna's word saying that modes act as supremacy, and then you can observe to an extent, but you can't like minutely to the finest detail analyze this. It's impossible. Yes, Mataji, he had a question, and then you.
I was also saying the same thing. Somehow I'm also thinking that karma, there must be something, in the sense some thought comes in my mind, is because of my past impressions, right? So they are there presented as modes, and I associate with them most of the time, because the living entity is being conditioned, always associates with what his thoughts. And I think transcendental mode is like devotional service. When you choose to do the to service to Krishna and not listen to your mind and apply your spiritual intelligence, you get out. You are not associating with that mode. So that's how you don't create the karma, right? So isn't that the understanding?
Okay, let me give an gist. The living entity's association with material nature is anadi, is beginningless. There is no a particular point of time that you came about. At least from our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy of understanding, it's anadi, it's beginningless. There is no time in point where you realize that you are in the modes. So Krishna says that once you come into contact, the eternal living entity, he says, when it comes into contact with the material mode, he's immediately conditioned. Because of that conditioning, you create karma. So, and that karma will take you on to the next life. You quit the body under certain mode, then you take the body under certain other conditions, then previous impressions act, and you have the results of the karma to again enjoy or suffer, and you are still doing activities, enjoying suffering. It's a vicious cycle. It's very hard to minutely analyze each component of karma that's acting on the living entity. That's the point I'm trying to make here. Karma is there because you are attracted to certain modes. For example, there is a thief, and you are attracted to stealing. And because you have that strong impression to steal, you will be either A, caught, or B, enjoy your riches which you stole. But you further create karma. Because you got caught, you are put into jail, it's a bad karma. Otherwise, it's a so-called good karma you enjoy. But then again, you are caught up with your karma. So that's a very vicious cycle, or it's a vast, unlimited ocean of karma that the living entity has accumulated because of modes of material nature. But when you come into contact with a pure devotee or devotional service, then slowly those karma will start, you know, reducing or getting burnt up, and the modes start to act less and less, and therefore you are less and less prone to sinful activities. And when you surrender onto Krishna, Krishna says, I am going to completely prevent you from taking your sinful activity. But till that point, you are just on your own. It's amazing how the living entity is like, you know, coming here. It's why, if you stop to pause, what sort of work must I have done in my previous life? I've got this body. How am I like enjoying or suffering when I have nothing to do with it? It's a vast thing. It's philosophical speculation. Sometimes it's good, according to Srila Prabhupada. And these sort of philosophical speculations actually will make you strong in devotional service. Such tough modes of Hare Krishna. It's so tough modes of nature. You know, somehow or other, I got this opportunity. I should take the best utilization and try to get out of it. I think we'll stop the questions here. Because we can keep the questions for later. We'll try to. We have still about 15 more, 20 more verses. I think about, 22 verses to go. All right. Text 11. Page 612 for 14th chapter, 612. Text 11. Sarva dvareshu dehesmin prakasha upajayate jnanam yada tada vidyat vivriddham sattvam ityuta. The manifestation of the modes of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Now, here, Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, they say that especially the ears are the first to be illuminated by knowledge. Because through the hearing, when we hear about devotional service, about spiritual life, about the other various aspects or the Vedas, when we hear through ears, then those ears are first to get purified. And then the other limbs or other gates of the body are automatically purified. When you hear that, you know, you shouldn't eat, certain forbidden items, then you stop it. So your mouth gets purified. And when you hear that you have to go to temple and see the deities of the Lord or do certain wonderful activities, then your eyes get purified. In this way, each of the senses, progressively they start to get illuminated. Don't ask me about all the senses, but all the nine gates, but slowly they get purified. And for a man in goodness, it's just all those senses are not unnecessarily doing the work which are going to implicate that particular person more and more. Because the knowledge is there, you wouldn't want to do anything which will implicate you further. That's the point. So that's how slowly the gates are illuminated. That's the mode of goodness. Text 12. Lobha pravrittirarambha karmanam asamaspriha rajasyetani jayante vivride bharatarshabha. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activities, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. Text 13. Aprakasho pravrittischa pramado moha evacha tamasi etani jayanti vivridhe kurunandana. When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kunti, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. So these are the various results of having or attracting, getting attracted to one particular modes of nature. In the next two verses, Krishna says, what happens when you die in a particular mode? Text 14. Yada sattve pravriddhetu pralayam yati dehabrut tadottama vidan lokan amalan pratipadyate. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. Text 15. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangishu jayate tata pralinas tamasi mudhayonishu jayate. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So in these verses, you can understand that, you know, we commonly know that a son of an industrialist tends to become an industrialist. Why? Because he already has that particular impetus, and it's just Krishna places him in that particular womb so that in the next birth he can take on to where he stopped. So the subtle distinction here is though this. Again, back to the competition of modes, it's not necessarily that if you are born in a particular family, you will be that. Because one of the things which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and others fought is that just on the basis of a birth in a particular family or in a caste, you automatically don't become that. For example, if you are born in a Brahmana family, doesn't mean you become a Brahmana. You are not qualified. You haven't had that training. Yeah, I'll take your question just a minute. Because, for example, now I am born. My father is a doctor, and now I don't automatically become a doctor. I was born in the family of a doctor, but my brother, he had to go to college and get his degree, and then now he is an orthopedic surgeon, qualified, and he's a qualified doctor. But just because I was born in the family of a doctor, will you come and I'll operate you? No way, exactly. So how can a person who just say that born in a Brahmana family, automatically you become Brahmana? So that's not possible. Because the modes are strong, they can attract anybody. They need the training. You had a question.
I just wanted to make a point. There's like the terminology I was trying to... Yeah, the terminology which they use, the Dvija Atma. Dvija Atma is a son of the Brahmana, so he doesn't say he's a Brahmana, but he says Dvijatma.
Dvijabandhu.
There's two terms. Dvijatma is son of that. And Dvijabandhu is actually, they say, is a fallen son of a Brahmana.
Okay. Thank you.
I think
Yeah, Bhagavatam. I didn't hear Dvijatma. Is it? Okay, thank you. Thank you for bringing up. Okay, text 16 are the results of the particular modes. The results of the, Karmana Sukritasyahu, Satvikam Nirmalam Phalam, Rajasastu Phalam Dukham, Ajnanam Tamasa Phalam. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Text 17. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam, rajasa loba evacha, pramada moha utamaso, bhavato jnanam evacha. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, foolishness, madness, and illusion. From the mode of ignorance, develop foolish, madness, and illusion. So, questions, comments? Yes, Shvetamachari had a question.
So, Prabhuji, regarding the results of the three modes of nature, so we have to associate, so every jiva is associated with all the three. It's not necessary that a person, it is really difficult to find a person only in the mode of goodness or only in the mode of ignorance. But it is also the state in which he is, for example, a kshatriya. In a kshatriya, the mode of passion is dominating. So it's all about what mode is dominating in you. So the competition here is justified, actually. Whatever mode is dominating you, you are going to achieve that result. But here, when they generalize a statement saying if you're in a mode of passion, you will only attain misery. So how does that apply to different jivas? Because it is necessary certain jivas have certain kinds of modes because of their karma or their state of birth or the place in which Krishna has placed them. For example, Arjuna is a kshatriya and he was in the mode, he has to be in the mode of passion to actually go to war and battle with his own people. But does that mean he is going to attain misery, or is this only relative to ordinary jivas like all of us? Or?
You answered your own question, because Arjuna was, Krishna says later in the later chapter, he says that, O sinless one, meaning to say that Arjuna was a liberated soul, an eternal associate of Krishna. In the mode of, the point Krishna makes here is that if you are predominantly in the mode of passion, constantly like hankering, you can see the case, okay, you can make a case study of people who are in that mode of passion. They wrote, fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of biographies saying that how I built this multi-millionaire empire, how I worked so hard and all that. But at the end of life, they had some temporary happiness or a fleeting happiness with what they achieved. If they had any success in their business venture or whatever may be the case, or ruling a kingdom or doing something like that. But because of their predominating association with mode of passion, the end result was misery. And it may not be at that point of time, or the person in mode of passion is always miserable. No, that's not the case here. The end result, what is your end result of association with mode of passion? That's the point Krishna is trying to make here. Because there is definitely some satisfaction. They're saying that, you know, I built like a great house, or I have you know, worked hard and become a CEO, or some, because of my passionate endeavor, I attained the fruit. There is definitely a satisfaction. But that fruit of itself won't give you happiness. It's later becoming misery. Because later we'll listen to that saying that in the mode of passion, in beginning it's like happiness, and later it becomes poison. And mode of goodness, it's beginning poison and end it's nectar.
So Prabhuji, the same extension, they've in purport 7 or 6, they've compared philosophers and scientists to be in the mode of goodness, because, or a brahmana, for example. But all these people, by birth or by character, they are in the mode of goodness. But if they are if they are if we're attached to the result, or basically, as you said, they consider themselves supreme now because of all the knowledge they have gained, would that make them get into the mode of passion now? Because though they have achieved all this by means of mode of goodness, they still have that supremacy feeling or factor in them, which will still make them take birth in the mode of goodness. But would that mean they are... So there is a slight confusion. So a person who is in the mode of goodness, if he's attached to the results, or if he gets hankered to, you know, I am great, I want to still be great, I want to still gain a lot of knowledge, does that mean that person is dragged or put into the mode of passion now? Or...
Well, we should understand that, you know, the modes are, if a person is satisfied by the knowledge and he is reasonably, you know, situated in the mode of goodness, then there is still a feeling of superiority, but it won't drag him to the mode of passion. But what happens is, in the passion, the Lord says greed develops. Now, greed can be even for the knowledge. If a person is a scientist, and then this is the knowledge I have, I need more and more, that greed, so that's bordering on mode of passion and goodness and passion, because the greed is coming in. So the mode is acting, there are all the modes which are acting simultaneously with supremacy. So it's not like one particular mode that is happening here. And then the mode of goodness may lead to mode of passion, may lead to mode of ignorance. It can happen so many ways. So it's not at all static. Very, very dynamic. Dynamic by the minute or second, or the hour or the day. So even if the person who is in the mode of goodness, if he remains somehow or other in the mode of goodness, then even if he takes, and then he can get a chance to be in that mode. It all depends on which mode you are dying. In the same, for example, you have a scientist who is very greedy of knowledge, and you know, yes, I need knowledge, and then you are driving to a conference to get more knowledge, and you die, you are dying in the mode of passion rather than in the mode of goodness. And the next birth you will take amongst those who are in that particular thing. At the exact moment of death, whatever is your state of mind, that you will be. It's very, very like, you know, pakka, exact. So associating with modes of nature itself is dangerous. So just the reason Prabhupada encourages philosophical speculation is, you know, you come to this point and say, you know what, forget these modes. Let me go beyond the modes. Let me just become a devotee. Then forget, I don't have to worry which mode is I'm in right now, who's competing, who's winning, who's losing. I don't care. Because as long as you're rendering devotional service to Krishna, you are beyond the modes. Or you're trying to be beyond the modes. Yes, we have 3:32. Who is the Sunday feast lecturer today? Okay, we have time. No, I didn't mean like that. I don't know if he is like late or he comes always late. I didn't mean that. Because by the lack of appearance of Hari Guru Prabhu, I said we have time. Hari Guru Prabhu, if you are listening, please accept our apologies. All right. Text 19. So, till now, Krishna briefly told about the modes. Now he's going on, how do you actually go about getting over the modes of nature? Text 19. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drishtanu pasyati. 18? Oh, thank you. Sorry. Urdvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasaha jaganya guna vrittistha ado gacchanti tamasaha. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. So Krishna, here he gives the death, and after death also, then if you continuously associate with that nature, then Krishna gives, he says, gacchanti is used twice. It means for the mode of goodness you go up, for the mode of ignorance you go down, for the mode of passion you just stay where you are. Tishtanti is stay, gacchanti go, up and down. There is one important, very crucial point I forgot to mention, or I wanted to mention, is that it seems as if Krishna is cruel because he is trapping the living entity in the modes of material nature, which are so hard and which are like acting. But one should understand that Krishna is no more cruel than the judge who is giving punishment to the offender. If one wants to be in the mode of in the modes, Krishna will give you that facility. Because the Lord is so kind, He is giving the information on how to get out. You are in this position, now this is the way you can get it out. So He's clearly, out of His causeless mercy, He's giving us this information. Text 19. Nanyebhya gunakartaram yada drishtanu pashyati gunebhyascha param vetti madbhavam sodigachyati. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to the to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. This is similar to which verse? Excellent. Prakriti Kriyamani. Why don't you say the belt out the whole verse?
Prakriti Kriyamani Guna Sarvani Guna Karmani Sarvasha Ahankara Vimurartha Kartaham Iti Manyate.
Wonderful. So Krishna says that when who actually sees that the modes of material nature are acting, and he sees as it is. And he also says he attains to my nature. Srila Prabhupada uses the word Mad Bhavam Adigachati. It's not he becomes me. He develops to my nature. And the nature is that qualitatively you become one with Krishna. In the sense you transcend the modes of material nature. Text 20. Yes, Kishore Prabhu had a question.
Is that word bhava refers to the stage in the development of love of God, or is just...
It's just His nature, that's all Krishna says.
Okay.
Thank you, good point though. I was confused also. Text 20. Gunan etan adityatrin dehi deha samudbhavam janma mrityu jara dukher vimukto mritamashnute. When the embodied being is able to transcend these modes, these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age and their distresses and enjoy nectar even in this life. So this is the knowledge of what Krishna gave us so far. That even in this lifetime, one can still be not associated with the modes. And Krishna gives the example of tortoise in the fifth chapter, where he says that a person who's still living in the world but is not affected by it. Just like also the example is the lotus leaf and the water. Because in recent South India Yatra, I went, we were driving, and then I could see these lotuses coming from these beautiful, beautiful lotuses, and the lotus leaf was there perfectly on the water. But the source of the lotus was very questionable. I mean, there is the mud, there is algae, and that's not a source of water I would gladly go and jump into and take a bath or something like that. But the lotuses were coming out, and they were seemed to be so unaffected by the modes of material, by the water around them. So that's how Krishna says. So Arjuna asks this question. How? He says, he asks three questions. Kairlingais trin Arjuna vacha, Kairlingais trin gunanetan, adito bhavati prabho, kim achara katam chaitam, trin gunan ati vartate. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior and how does he transcend the three modes of material nature? So these are the three questions asked by Arjuna. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava na dveshti sampravittani na nidrivittani kankshati udasina vadasino gunair yo na vichalyate guna vartantityevam yo vastati ningate sama dukkha sukha svastha sama loshtam shakanchana tulya priya priyo dhiras tulya nindatma samstutihi manapamanayo stulyas tulyo mitrari pakshayo sarvarambha parityagi guna atitasa uchyate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment or delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through these through all these reactions of material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, and who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all the material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of material nature. Here, the interesting thing is Krishna answers the first two questions. He says, first thing is, what is the symptoms of one who is transcended and what is his behavior? So in the first two verses, he says the symptoms, and in the next two verses he says are the behavior. For example, here, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment or delusion, it seems like, you know, I don't care if there is light in the house, there is a power cut, or if there is like, you know, if I am in the stadium where there is like floodlights, I don't care. It's not illumination, is that Bhakti Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he translated is that those who is not disturbed when the modes are there. Here, illumination, attachment and delusion considered through sattva, raja and tama. Who is not disturbed when there are modes are present and who does not hanker for them. So that means to say he is beyond the modes. And for one who is not beyond the modes, he hankers when the modes are not present. That's an interesting thing which Krishna says. Just try to understand this particular point. Even I'm understanding right now. So I'm just passing it on to you. So the jiva has been for such a long time has been entwined with the modes of material nature that when the modes of material nature are not present, he hankers for them. I want to be in that modes. Just see that if Krishna were to suddenly lift you up from the modes of material nature, you will hanker, Krishna put me back into that modes because I'm hankering for them. I haven't cleansed myself completely to be beyond the modes of material nature. Krishna has, that's why he doesn't let you interfere with your independence in the modes of nature. Because Krishna knows that you'll hanker for them if you don't have it. And so the person who has transcended those modes doesn't hanker when they are present and doesn't long for them when they are absent. Because jiva has no basis on his or her own. There is no independent shelter for jiva on me. I have to be either associated with these modes or I have to be associated with Krishna. Or struggling somewhere in between. But I have to have that, some sort of shelter. I can't live without shelter. That's my nature. But for Krishna, he doesn't need shelter. He is the shelter of everybody. So Krishna says that he doesn't hanker, he doesn't want for it when they are not present. And
excuse me. Prabhuji.
Yes, Prabhuji.
So a person who has beyond these three modes of material nature, these are the symptoms. So if he doesn't bother if they are present or does not hanker if they are not present.
Correct.
So what does it mean by if they are present? That means how is he beyond the modes?
Because he is situated in the self and he realizes that I have nothing to do with this nature. Though they are acting on me, for example, when we read in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, Maharaj Jadabharat's example, then we know what exactly Krishna is talking about. He was just living like a dumb and deaf man, but he was self-situated. And he knew that all these things that are happening, his brothers mistreating him, he had no food to eat sometimes, sometimes he had opulent food. He knew all these things were just passing and he had nothing to do with it. And he was just situated in his self. So even though they were present, he was not disturbed. So that is somebody who's living in this material world, but not living in this material world. Because he's not affected by the modes. This is Jivan Mukta, still living but completely free. And Krishna says, that's how he says in the previous verse, he says that those who know, even in this life, they can be like released from the modes. And the pure devotees, also the other aspect applies is to pure devotees, because they say, birth after birth, they don't care for liberation. They are in this, they say that, you know what, my Lord, put me in this wherever you want to put me, but let me be a devotee. As long as you're in the material world, there are some sort of, you know, material churning that goes on that sometimes, you know, is good, sometimes it's bad, because it's a world of dualities and the devotee is not disturbed. That's fine. So that is situated, being firmly situated, that I don't care. It's hard because when one is in the body, he's always affected. But when he's completely self-realized, sometimes I came here with nothing, now I have a family, not disturbed. And later in the old age, and the family members die or I die, I'm not disturbed because I have nothing to do with this family. It's all intermediate. I have this position, I got it, not disturbed. If somebody grabs away the position, not disturbed. I have this wealth, okay, I don't have the wealth. It's all happening with the modes of material nature. I'm not involved in that, so that's how it is. Yes. Hari Guru Prabhu ki jai. I don't know. You'll come. Yes.
Prabhuji, when someone has already transcended the modes of nature,
right,
then what's the purpose of having these modes act on him? Like, for example, you gave one example, and he's already Jivan Mukta. And what is the use of, again, beating him with the modes of nature?
The nature is, the modes of nature are present, but they do not act. By Krishna's mercy, they do not act on him. Just like if you are in the jail, and the superintendent says, you know what, take care of this prisoner, the guards won't beat you up as much, or they won't even touch you, they'll let you be. You're still in the prison though, but they have some special protection. Similarly, those who are actually beyond the modes, they are not affected by the modes, though they are living amongst the modes. Now, why that happens? Either A, it's Krishna's desire that he wants to keep them in the world, or B, they are not 100% like there. There are so many other factors, it's hard to decipher in that way. But know for certain this, if you are in this material world, the modes are acting. Whether they act upon you or to what degree they act upon you depends on your degree of surrender.
More or less, you know, like for example, one has already transcended the modes of material nature and he's a Jivan Mukta, but someone, we see that, you know, someone might come and he can, for example, spit on him or he can beat him. Those things can still happen. So, because he already liberated, so why is he again getting something on him?
Because that particular person, a devotee, realizes that it's my past karma. I am not affected. My body is being spit upon, or my body is being beaten. I have nothing to do with this. So why do I care?
Sometimes very famous and realized souls, they suffer a lot. And I'm just wondering whether they do that to set an example and give example to others. Sometimes your disciples might do wrong things and the guru suffers because of that, although the guru might be a Jivan Mukta.
That's a possible explanation, yes.
Yeah. I was just thinking that maybe apparently to us it looks like they are suffering and they are not.
Internally, they are not. They are, yeah, not, that's
suffering.
The point.
Yeah, maybe.
Exactly. Thank you, Mother. That's the point, that the modes are not acting. Though they are acting, it doesn't influence that person. So the pain comes, say for example, because of your karma, you lose a position or you lose money, you are in deep suffering, or you lose a family member, you are in deep suffering. But that event is happening by the modes of nature, but since you are beyond it, you won't suffer. Internally, you don't suffer. That's a state of consciousness. Internally, you don't suffer. It's happening. Yes, Prabhuji. Prabhu Jallapuram. Haribol! Hariguru Prabhu! I thought you came here to encourage us.
And also learn.
Yes, Sridhar.
So, this situation where the jiva is like, doesn't care about the situation, is that the Brahman realization stage? And how is he in this Brahman realization stage? What is the relationship between that person and God, Supreme Personality of God? What kind of relationship happens?
Okay, yeah. So let me kind of qualify the word care, because it seems as if a person who has achieved or transcended the modes of material nature becomes like you know, absolutely callous. You know, people. The point, its care is that he's free from the dualities. There is, in this material world, there are dualities. You know, there is happiness, there is distress. Yes, there is poor, there is rich, there is old, there is young, there is life, there is death. So these things, they are happening, it doesn't affect him. Realizing that these are happening by the will of Lord under the modes of nature. But he in fact, by learning this, you become more compassionate. That I know that this material world is not a good place. There are so many people there. Let me help them out. So the compassion becomes more spiritual rather than material. The thing is, understand this way. A person is facing injustice. There are two ways of looking. Okay, this is the example. A person is being persecuted. A materialistic person who is not beyond the modes, he'll say that the person who is persecuting him, he's the villain and he should be destroyed. Yes, that's a natural tendency. But a person in the spiritual consciousness, he thinks these are the modes of material nature that are acting. Both are an illusion. The person who's a victim is an illusion, but the person who thinks that I am the one who is like strong is an illusion. Both needs to understand that neither of them are persecuting each other, but they are acting under the modes, and the modes are only at play. And so that's the vision is different. It's exactly the same thing that's happening, but what I perceive depends on my level of consciousness.
This is a Brahman realization stage, right?
Okay. Thank you. And then in Brahman realization, you see everybody equal. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Soshati Na Kangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu. We learn in the 18th chapter that we see everybody equally. And it's also said here that I see the enemy, I see my friend equally. Krishna says that those who are in the Brahman realization, here in this verse he says that though who treats alike both friends and enemy equally. Is a person who is transcendental is in the Brahman realization. Yes.
This is just follow up to my previous question. But we also see that when you know the who are, you know, the top level of devotees, when they are in trouble, they could be you know, liberated souls also. So when they, for example, you know, we have a Gajendra story also. Mm. When they're in trouble, they pray to the Lord. Mm. I mean, the fact that they're praying to the Lord, it means that they're suffering the pain. Mm. So how can we understand it? Because now there are two. Well, if we think they're beyond the modes of material nature, then they should not feel any pain at that point. This is just a play of the modes, and they should not be feeling any pain. So because they're praying, that means they must be having some pain to their body. So that means they are not completely beyond the modes of material nature. So how can we understand this, you know, whether they are beyond or not?
Outstanding point. Excellent point. Partially the answer to that we'll do when we do Nectar of Devotion. We'll go in very deep detail on what is this crying out to the Lord. The short answer to that question is that when one is beyond the modes of material nature, doesn't mean that one stops depending on Krishna. In fact, one becomes more and more attached to Krishna. And when you cry, "Oh Lord, my position is gone. Now get me back my position," is different than saying that I am in a life and death situation. Please help me so that I can render devotional service to you. It depends on what state of consciousness you are asking for Krishna. Because a living entity can never be independent of Krishna. In fact, the more one becomes independent of the modes of material nature, one becomes dependent on Krishna. And that's a progressive path. And Srila Prabhupada also writes in the last purports that if you come to the Brahman platform, which is the beyond the modes of nature, and if you don't take shelter of Krishna, then there's every chance you might again fall back into the same nature which you transcended. So seeking out help for Krishna depends on what is the state of your consciousness. Whether you are asking Krishna just to supply you with the material desires, or really it's a life and death or a very serious situation which is affecting your spiritual life and service to Krishna, and you are asking Krishna that, you know, help me repair or help me fix this particular problem which is having this. Arjuna also, he was apparently in particular illusion in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, but it was a right step that he says, I surrender unto you, now explain to me, you know, I have lost, I'm just depending on you. So that is not a negative thing or not a feeling of pain. In fact, if you ask Krishna in that direction, then it's a right step. In seventh chapter, we read that even though Jana, what is that? Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam. That verse, he says that four types of people actually surrender unto me. So surrendering or start serving me. So approaching Krishna with any motive is okay. Because quickly Krishna will purify whatever is that ulterior motive you are going to seek with him. So there are two things, transcending the modes and then trying to surrender to Krishna and depending Krishna is a progressive path. But on your own effort, you can actually transcend the modes. A person can do dhyana yoga and all the things which we mentioned in the sixth chapter and he can become free of the modes. But there is no attachment to lotus feet of Krishna. So,
Regarding this, you know, the one who actually, and regarding this definition given for the one who has transcended the modes of material nature, he says, who situated regards alike happiness and distress. Means distresses are two kinds. The bodily distresses are very, very difficult. The pains caused on the body are very, very difficult to tolerate. So if some crocodile has caught the leg and is pulling into the river and gets a great pain, apparently, let's say that person is beyond the modes of material nature. So at that point, is he going to treat, oh, this is same as something else, you know, some happiness that he enjoyed before? Where do we draw a line?
We draw the line is that, okay, in that sense, that any devotee who's initiated, it's said that the spiritual master takes all the karma. Strictly speaking, you and I shouldn't suffer. Not a single pain, not a single trouble in life, not mental, not bodily, nothing. But yet we see that they are struggling, right? They are suffering or there is pain. Why? Because sometimes Krishna gives you that pain, even though there is no karma, just to improve your devotional service, just to improve your degree of surrender. So it's hard to say whether this mode is causing, whether this Krishna is causing, where I'm in between. Just one has faith, then progressively one is it's revealed. So we take it in that sense. But the answer to your question is, if you lose something, there is pain. And actually, this is a nice point, because in fifth canto of Bhagavatam, we hear, when, for those who are not very familiar with the fifth canto, the brief gist is, as Hari Guru Prabhu is going to kind of, you know, come and he's just waiting and watching. Prabhu, no stones, no guns. I don't have helmet, no bulletproof vest. What's that? So for those, so Maharaj Bharat was an exalted king. He gave up everything. He went to the forest and he meditated, and he was very advanced in realization of God. It is said that he came to the platform of Bhava, and then he got attached to a deer. And then in the next birth, he took the form of a deer. But Krishna's mercy was there. He remembered why he took birth as a form of deer. And he avoided bad association in that life. In the next life, he became Jadabharat. And when he became Jadabharat, he was transcendentally, he was beyond the modes of material nature. And it's happened by chance that he had to carry the palanquin for Maharaj Rahuguna. And because he was an exalted soul, he was seeing there are ants on the path. And then he didn't want to step on the ant, because of which he was irregularly carrying and jostling that palanquin. And Maharaj Rahuguna got very irritated with that, and he chastised him. The point I was trying to make is that he chastised him. It did affect him. He felt a little, you know, upset. But because of his spiritual, advancement, he was able to withstand that, tolerate. So material nature sometimes may give problems even to those who are like beyond the modes. They are able to tolerate it, knowing that, you know, this is not me that's happening. It's happening to my body. That's okay. So it's still there is a pain, but you can tolerate it. Yes, Prabhuji, let me complete the whole, and then we'll be at the mercy of Hari Guru Prabhu. Yes, good point. He'll answer. Pretty much spot. I'll just. There are two more verses. We'll complete that, and then I'll take your question. Sorry. You had a comment.
Just a one sentence answer. Okay. So, well, there's a difference between the prayer of neophytes and the prayer of the Jivan Muktas. The neophytes pray for the pain to go away. The Jivan Muktas, they pray to Lord Krishna to give them the endurance and to give them the power to withstand the pain.
Nice. And in some cases, they ask to give pain. Like Queen Kunti, she said that, you know, may all these pains, tribulations come again and again so that we can see your lotus feet again and again. So it depends on one's consciousness. Because sometimes a devotee feels that if there is no pain, then I won't surrender to Krishna. I might as well endure that pain and see Krishna. So it all depends. But here we are, the thing is, devotional service, pure devotional service to Krishna happens beyond the mode of material nature. We learn that. And then after that, there is an interplay of Krishna and his devotees, and the material nature is just acting as like a facilitator to push the devotee more towards Krishna or things like that. So, okay. Thank you for that comment. Prabhu Prasad. Okay. Text 26. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma boyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Here the question, obvious question is that if you engage in unalloyed devotional service to Krishna, you come on to the level of Brahman? Why? How? Because here Prabhupada goes through a lot of words to explain that Brahman means to understand our spiritual position, to come to the point where we are situated in our spiritual platform. Because Krishna is all pure and Krishna is Parabrahman, and to serve him, you have to be at least Brahman. So when you perform devotional service, you transcended the modes of material nature and come to the Brahman platform, and again keep continuing. It's not like my devotional service is to reach Brahman platform. That is, it is just a qualification. It's just like you work hard to do something, and for example, if you are a student, right? And then like our Himanshu Prabhu here, he's pursuing his PhD at computer science in Stanford. So now to get his degree, he's going to work hard in computer sciences and related field and do research and do so much of work. But after that, it's not that he's going to become a forest ranger after having a computer degree, because you're going to apply that particular degree to further go on. So the similar analogy is we use bhakti, or we follow the path of bhakti and we transcend the modes of material nature and use the same bhakti to please Krishna, because Krishna under all circumstances is pleased only by bhakti and nothing else. But if you have an ulterior motive, you perform devotional service just like the Mayavadis and say, you know, bhakti, bhakti, bhajan, 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 and once I am liberated, I am Narayan. That is a different kind of mentality altogether, and you will fall down. Yes, Sridhar. No. Wait. One more. Then I am free. Now we are done. I'll take your question. Text 27. Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasya vyavasya cha Shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukhaiskantasya cha sukhasyaikantikasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Here Srila Prabhupada explains that he goes into detail to explain like Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. And Krishna in this verse says that I am the basis. I am the basis of that eternal, imperishable Brahman, which is so full of these nectarian things. And then just imagine serving me. That is the point. Because here in the 26th verse, one may stop. Okay, I have attained the Brahman platform, but what is the basis? Krishna says, Pratishtaham, I am the basis. And also, Pratishtaham means shelter. So I am the shelter of Brahman also. Krishna uses both the words. So you get like, you know, inestimable happiness when you perform devotional service. So the sum and substance is that the modes of material nature, they act not very good. Get out of the modes, be very happy. 14th chapter. You had a question for Sridhar. Sridhara.
So the one you mentioned, like doing devotional service and attain to the Brahman situation, position. But the Mayavadis also, what they do, I believe, is that initially they follow the bhakti process.
Mm.
And like Prabhupada was giving an example where he was crossing a stream, a little small stream, and he was holding the hand of a devotee and he crossed over, but Prabhupada should have pulled him, but he pushed him. So he was giving an example saying this is what the Mayavadis do.
Mm.
When they reach the other side of the shore, they push you back. So they hold Krishna's hand or the Supreme Personality's hand till they reach a position and then they push back.
Nice analogy, thank you. Yeah. And the other example is given like, you know, it's like you approach Krishna. And then, you know, your Lord. And once you reach some your so-called related stage, I take out my sword and chop off Krishna's head and I'll take the position of Krishna. So that is there. That's another way of looking at it. Nice, very nice analogy. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? There is one thing I forgot to... Actually, it's my fault. I completely apologize for that. Is that... there are a few verses for memorization which I didn't mention in the chapters. So probably in the next couple of days you will have those. I promise they won't be a long list. They'll keep it manageably less. Other thing I was thinking is that we'll have the verses for all the chapters now. I'll just give it to you. So that we'll have, you know, 3-4 months to memorize. And the other thing we can also do is that before we start Bhakti Shastri class, we'll read all the verses together and the translations. So I thanks to Vaisheshika Prabhu, you know that when you keep on repeating the same verses, you don't have to make effort to memorize it, automatically comes. What do you say, Kishore Prabhu? Good idea? Okay, thank you. So the exam is on May 1st. I hope you all can make it. Because makeup exam is all dependent on Krishna. If he wants to have, then we'll have. Otherwise, forget it. But the goal this time is we'll stick to the May 1st deadline. Please let me know if that is a problem or if you need more time to prepare. The reason is we complete on May 1st, then we at least start by June 1st, the fourth semester. And 3-4 months, I think we should be done. So June, July, August. Yeah, August middle or September, August end. We should be done with Bhakti Shastri first batch. That's the goal. Is that okay? No, it's a Sunday. I think. Oh, it's a weekend. Sorry. Yeah, it's a weekday. I heard it as weekday. Yeah, it's a weekend. Unfortunately, I have to go to work on a weekday. So. Weekend is fine, right? Okay. Yeah, I thought so too. It'll work out well. Any other feedback? Any other... The only thing is that those who have not... Hare Krishna. Those who have not paid their fees, please do so as soon as you can. It's just whatever you give goes to the temple. For those who might think that this is a side business I'm running here. Hundred 100% of it goes to the temple. This is just my service I'm doing here. So so no reluctance on that part. You know, this man is like taking and eating all our money. No, I'm not. what else? Any other points? Any feedback so far? Any other suggestions you had? Yes, Hari Guru Prabhu. You had a question? What's that? This is open forum. Anybody can. We don't have. Yes.
So, Prabhuji, I was just going through the purport of the last verse. So, there, Srila Prabhupada writes that the four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth, but they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service.
Right.
One who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman runs the risk of falling down.
Yes.
So, and in just the previous verse, you mentioned that the Brahma Bhuyaya stage of Avyabhicharina Bhakti, you have to come to at least the Brahman stage to relate with Krishna. Through bhakti, you at least come to the Brahman stage. And how is there a risk of falling down when the when you have the verse saying whatever service you do is in devotional service is not lost? So what is the fall down there then?
Nice, outstanding question. The Brahman realization platform can happen without bhakti also. For example, if you perform Dhyana Yoga and if you perform other activities, then one tries to transcend the modes of material nature. So Prabhupada is mentioning in that aspect that without touch of bhakti, even a Brahman realized person runs the risk of falling down. Now, through devotional service, I also want to clarify my point is that unless one is on a Brahman platform, only can you render devotional service needs slight qualification, as in anybody can perform devotional service even though one is qualified or unqualified and one rises to that level. Using devotional service just to be free from miseries of material existence, which is a Brahman platform, is not the end of itself. And Krishna says, okay, you have come here, you will stay there. Because ye yathamam prapadyante. If you are wanting to enjoy my Brahman happiness, you will stay there. But if you want to come to my lotus feet, there is still more steps to go. So that's where Prabhupada said that you don't stop at Brahman platform. And you just keep going on till you attain lotus feet of Krishna, which is the stage where you will never fall back. Where Krishna protects you.
So, yeah, that's what I was also leaning to think. So the way to understand verse 26 would be then that by rendering unfailing, continuous devotional service to the Lord, it's a byproduct that you come to the Brahman stage. Or here, Brahman actually refers to the identity of the living entity, Aham Brahmasmi, not necessarily the conception of a nihilistic Brahman.
Yes.
So this is Savishesh Brahman, like you are also existing in a state free of dualities and rendering devotional service, which is only attained when you are not failing in your duty of devotional service. I don't think this has any bearing on the nihilistic Brahman realization that is usually associated with the Jnana Kanda and all those things.
Yeah, and also the other Brahman realization is that you identify or you come in the stage of your spiritual existence. You are free from the concept of the body and thus you are free from the concept of the modes of material nature. So in that stage, you can purely relate to Krishna because you are in the spiritual platform, not on the material platform. In the material platform, when one is in the sadhana stage, then one is still acted upon by the modes of material nature till one advances, till one renders pure devotional service. And actually, Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that one who is in the sadhana stage, then to the degree one advances, one is free from the modes and the sufferings of this material world. And so it depends on your consciousness and what your goal is. Because Krishna is like a unlimited wish-fulfilling tree. Whatever you want, he'll give. Ye yatha mam prapadyante. So what is your, you want to achieve unalloyed lotus feet of Krishna, unalloyed loving service at lotus feet of Krishna, or just be free from these trials of material world and just be, you know, Brahman platform, that's it. I'm happy here.
Also, this Arjuna does refer to Krishna as Parabrahman. So it's just a name for Krishna. It doesn't necessarily always indicate a featureless, attributeless light or something like that, right?
No.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says that the purpose why Vedavyas consolidated all the teachings in the form of Brahma Sutra is because he is describing about Brahman, Krishna, and it's nothing other than Krishna that all the things are described about.
True, but...
So, of course, the confusion may arise in the terminology that you may call Krishna as Brahman also, but with the motive of not taking away any attributes from him, which is still valid.
I beg to differ, because Krishna can be a person or a Brahman with no features. The Bhagavatam says that the Supreme Lord is realized in three phases. Vadanti tat tattva vidas ijnanam advayam. The word is that non-dual substance is the word, key word there. That it's beyond our conception. That how can, if you say a person is non-dual, is one and the same, can be three different types.
But
the Brahman is also Krishna. You cannot take away Brahman saying that, you know, Brahman and Krishna don't match. No, they are one and the same. Krishna is Brahman, Brahman is Krishna.
Yeah.
In the sense of one's realization, to the extent how much can you realize a personal form of Krishna. When you are in the material world, Prabhupada writes in the same purport that, you know, unless one realizes that, you know, Brahman is something which is opposite to this material world, that is the Brahman realization. But the spiritual variegatedness is something like material world but transcendental. So to come to that, Parabrahman is Supreme Brahman.
I agree, but that's what does that mean?
So,
Brahman means
attributeless. Hari Guru Prabhu, we are Brahman, yes? We are, because living entities are Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. And Krishna is also Brahman.
Yeah.
He is Parabrahman, he is the Supreme Brahman. We are the infinitesimally small Brahman. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Because devotees know that Krishna is everything. Yeah.
So the Brahman here also refers to the attributes of Krishna.
Yes. One of the aspects.
By devotional service, it enables you to relate to Krishna in his true...
That's why devotional service enables you to relate with Krishna. It's just a way of calling him Brahman, but doesn't necessarily mean that you are at an intermediate stage.
Right. Yes, Himanshu Prabhu had a question or a comment.
Hare Krishna. I had a comment on the use of the word Parabrahman. So, is this understanding okay? We associate effulgence with a personality. So, Parabrahman is the origin of the effulgence, which is Brahman. Just like sun is the origin for sunshine. And similarly, personality of God and his holy name. So we can, Brahman is the same as Parabrahman, and Parabrahman is the same as Brahman in our realization that it's both that we have to, we have to attain to both. It's a level of realization.
In one sense, you can say that, yeah. But
in Parabrahman as... would mean the person, right? Who, from whom the effulgence or Brahman is originating.
Yeah, you can think like that too. Yes. Yes. It all depends on Hari Guru Prabhu. We are like, you know, we are at the mercy of Hari Guru Prabhu. Till whatever time he says yes, we'll say yes.
So Prabhuji, in verse number 27, where he's talking about the impersonal Brahman, Krishna mentions that it's the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So why does he say ultimate happiness when it is only impersonal Brahman? I thought ultimate happiness will be in devotional service too.
Because Krishna says, I am the basis of that. And even I was, to be honest with you, I was confused with that term. I think I'll do some research, more research, or I'll give you the exact answer. I have my doubts about that, but Krishna says that I am the basis, or I am the shelter of that impersonal Brahman, and sukais kantiyais, whatever is that last phrase, is translated as ultimate happiness, or the basis of, but I don't know. I don't have an exact answer right now. I'll do more research, I'll let you know.
That if it's ultimate happiness, then why does one fall down?
Correct,
from that?
Correct. And then why does Rupa Goswami say that the happiness through devotional service is like 1 trillion 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 times more than happiness derived from Brahman? So, I have to look it up. I didn't have time to go through that. It's a good, relevant question. Thank you, Mataji. Yes, Himanshu Prabhu. I think it's the last question.
Following up on the same comment in the question, so it says, this is the constitutional position of the ultimate happiness. If I describe in a little more engineering terms, this is to understand Krishna, who is the ultimate happiness, we have to understand what is necessary to understand that ultimate happiness. So, and Brahman would mean like some place where you have to come to. You have to understand that everything is the spiritual. It's the same spiritual realm or same spiritual effulgence.
Nice point. Yes.
The possibility of falling down from the state of Brahman, that in that purport to 27, it does clarify that this happens when there is no devotional service involved. And given that, one may have to say that there are two things that could be happening. One is in the state of Brahman, has transcended the modes of material nature, and then is either in devotional service or not in devotional service. If the person is in devotional service, then he or she would proceed to that ultimate stage and not fall down. But one disconnected from devotional service would. And it also seems that this chapter ends with a climax, which is to come to the stage of Brahman. But the qualification is that Brahman would not be sustained without devotional service.
Nice. Excellent point. Sukeshwari Mataji, follow up.
I'll be quick. Prabhuji, we were just, not only in this shloka, but in many more shlokas in Bhagavad Gita, the word that we are seeing can mean more than one thing, like in Sanskrit. So I was wondering, like what Mataji asked, we were discussing that Brahman can be like how you said you were just describing to Hari Guru Prabhu that we are part of the Brahman too. So I was just thinking that in different contexts Krishna means different, and that is the confidential part of Krishna. So a person who's in devotional service really realizes what he means. A person who wants to understand him in a way of impersonal realization will understand him in that way. So it's like he wants to, it's kind of keeping everybody happy. So the Sanskrit word itself and a verse itself can mean so many different things, like how everybody else can just mean. So I was wondering that in our context, like in devotional service, we probably take it as the personal form is also Brahman.
Thank you. And actually, Himanshu Prabhu is very aptly and astutely pointed out that it is said is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Means unless one is on a Brahman platform, you cannot render devotional service, which is the highest form of understanding. I think that's how Prabhupada phrased this. Because if Brahman is the highest form of happiness, which is so not in tune with our Vaishnava, at least you be that is the constitutional position, you be situated of ultimate happiness. So that could be taken that way. So on page I have piqued the interest here. Thanks to Anshu Prabhu. It's page 626. Is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness? Prabhupada doesn't translate is the ultimate happiness, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal. It's about Brahman and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. And Prabhupada doesn't say it is the ultimate happiness. No, constitutional position, see, there is conditional service and your constitutional is your nature. Or what is your state? Your state is that you are a Brahman or you are a living spirit. You're not the body. And that's your constitutional position. That's my understanding. Again, I don't have the exact answer. We may need to do a little bit more research on what is this constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Or what does Srila Prabhupada mean by this? So I'll let you know. Probably in the next class we'll try to discuss. For a few minutes. Okay, Hari Guru. Any other questions? Any other comments? Yes. Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned that by September we would be done, Prabhu, the other semester? No, because I was listening on the phone all through, but then while driving I couldn't hear the exact.
That's tentatively the plan. So August, September, by Radhashtami, we will try to.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
So it's May 1st is a Labor Day. So you have to labor for the exam, I have to labor to set the paper. It's a Labor Day, right? May 1st? Yeah. India, that's what? Somewhere. The laboring is going on. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, and all the esteemed students of Bhakti Shastri ki jai.